From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. We're going to do something a bit different and lighter than we've done in previous weeks. We're here at the National Postal Museum of the Smithsonian Institution, and we're going to talk a bit about philately within the context of the museum's new exhibit entitled Baseball, America's Home Run. With me today is Daniel Piazza, curator of philately at the museum. Daniel collects and writes about stamps and postal history. He also sits on the board of governors of the Vatican Philatelic Society and edits its journals. In Washington, Daniel serves as literature chairman of the National Philatelic Exhibitions of Washington, also known as NAPEX. Welcome to Naps Chat, Daniel.
Morning. Thank you for having me.
Before I begin, I need to ask you this question. Are you related to former New York Mets and LA Dodgers all-star catcher Mike Piazza?
I get that question a lot, especially since I've been curating this baseball exhibit. I am related to a guy named Mike Piazza. He's my brother, but he's not a baseball player. He gets teased about it a lot more than I do.
Okay, let me start the questions about the exhibit itself. What's the relationship between baseball and the Postal Service, and specifically, why is the Postal Museum of all the Smithsonian institutions hosting this exhibit?
I love that question. It's the favorite question I get about exhibits. Why is the Postal Museum doing that? Because it's an opportunity to show the connections that we have to all sorts of topics that people don't expect a Postal Museum to connect with. So, you know, on the most basic level, there are more than 60 U.S. postage stamps commemorating baseball, both individual players as well as anniversaries in the sport and the legendary playing fields. So we have the stamps, a lot of the artwork and the original stamps in the exhibition. As well, postal employees over the years have organized and played on industrial and recreational baseball teams. We have fan letters to people like Jackie Robinson and baseball commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis in the exhibition. You know, for many years before the advent of the internet, the main way that fans had to make their opinions known about the game to managers and players was to write letters. So we have a selection of those. So there are all sorts of unexpected ways, I think, that the Postal Service and mail intersect with the sport of baseball.
I got to ask you the question about former Commissioner Landis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many letters did he get from Chicago White Sox fans when he sort of emasculated the team after the scandal?
Well, it's interesting. You know, Commissioner Landis was brought in after the 1919 gambling scandal to kind of clean up corruption in baseball. And for the first year, year and a half, the actions that he took were met with general approval. And then in early 1921, he decided to suspend Babe Ruth from the game of baseball because Ruth had played in an unsanctioned exhibition game. And this was Babe Ruth who just the year before, in his debut year with the New York Yankees, had almost single-handedly saved the sport from ruin. And the letters, that is when the letters to Landis just started pouring in, excoriating him for suspending Ruth. Letters to him saying things like, you know, you were hired to save baseball, not to kill it. And how could you go after Babe Ruth? A small number of letters telling him, well, yes, we think you did the right thing. But overwhelmingly, the letters were just tearing him apart for his decision. And ultimately, he had to sort of relent and let Ruth back in the game.
Yeah, early in the 1920s, you just couldn't log on to your computer and email a letter to the commissioner of baseball. It actually took some effort to write a letter and then put a postage stamp on it,
right,
send it to Major League Baseball, and express your concerns about decisions made by baseball.
Right. And, you know, and the other time that fans really let Commissioner Landis know how they felt about things was in 1943. I mean, I think most of us know that the sport of baseball, Major League Baseball, racially integrated in 1947 when Jackie Robinson took the field for the Dodgers. But there had been several attempts, false starts, if you will, at integrating the game racially before that. And one of them came in December of 1943 when Commissioner Landis brought together all of the team owners for a meeting in New York. And Paul Robeson was there and spoke to them. Sam Lacy, who was a prominent black sports writer at the time, addressed the team owners and urged them to integrate the game at that point. This was in the context of World War II. And African Americans are in uniform overseas, but they can't be in uniform on the ball field. And people are seeing the hypocrisy of this. Mm. And the letters again. This is 22 roughly years later, after the Babe Ruth scandal. The letters again pour into Commissioner Landis, encouraging him to integrate the game. But it doesn't happen for a variety of reasons in December of 43. And those things have repercussions. So for years, you know, the baseball MVP award was named the Kennesaw Mountain Landis MVP award. And last year or 2 years ago, the Sports Writers Association actually voted to take Kennesaw Mountain Landis's name off the award because of his failure to integrate the game.
Let's talk a little bit personally about letters. I can recall as a young boy sending letters to my baseball heroes asking for autographs and pictures. For example, I sent letters to future Hall of Famer Tom Seaver and one of my Met favorites, Ron Swoboda, asking for their autographs. Do you have a lot of those types of letters in the exhibit? Are there any that stand out?
We have some fan letters and also fan art in the exhibit. So one section deals with very young Sally Ride before she was a physicist and an astronaut. She was a young girl growing up in California in the late 1950s in the era of California baseball. The Giants and the Dodgers had just moved from New York to California, and she was, as a young girl, making drawings of players on the team and drawings of them on the field, and probably also sending for their autographs and things like that. And that lifelong interest that she had in sports led her to become among other things, a tennis player in her own right, but also a stamp collector, focusing on stamps depicting sports around the world. And we also have a section of fan letters to Jackie Robinson. Those are coming on loan to us from the Library of Congress. Some of them have to do with the sport of baseball. Some of them have to do with his involvement in the civil rights movement later on. But they're sort of, as you said earlier, that was about the only way that players and fans, other than at a game, that was the way they interacted was through the mail. We also have some letters from fans to each other in the exhibit, describing a game that they saw or players who they saw on the field and that sort of thing. So fan to fan through the mail, not just fans and players.
Like Yankee fans writing to Red Sox fans trash talking.
I would have loved to have some of those. I didn't find any, but what I did find, which was interesting, were, and in our own collection, some letters from fans, especially in the military, to each other when they were serving overseas in World War II. A lot of major league players joined the military and played baseball in exhibition games to raise troop morale. And there are these letters describing, I saw these great players play a game of baseball in Honolulu in World War II or something like this. So it's all through the mail, on the envelopes, on the letters, the stamps, all related to baseball.
Now, I know how excited you are about this exhibit and how the people at the museum are. This exhibit was supposed to open in 2020,
right,
but the pandemic delayed it for 2 years. I'm telling you, how frustrating has that been for you and for Smithsonian in delaying the opening of this exhibit?
Well, delays are always frustrating. There are a lot of loans in this exhibition, both from other institutions and private collectors. A lot of pieces are on loan to us for this show. And fortunately, all the lenders were really great in working with us and adjusting the schedule. But the universe has a reason for everything, I guess. And one of the side benefits of the delay was we're now opening the exhibit in 2022, this weekend, actually. And this year is both the 75th anniversary of Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier in Major League Baseball on April 15th, 1947. It's also the 50th anniversary this year of Roberto Clemente's death on New Year's Eve, bringing earthquake relief supplies to, I think it was Nicaragua. Mm-hmm. And so, so we now have these new anniversaries to commemorate, and as luck would have it, it was not planned at all this way. Jackie Robinson's uniform and Roberto Clemente's uniform are both in this rotation of the exhibition, so they'll be on display for the in the anniversary years. So that worked out nicely.
Talking about anniversaries, the first one of the first baseball stamps was issued in 1939. James Farley was the Postmaster General at that time. I know there's a big backstory about the issuance of that 3-cent stamp. Could you describe the background?
Sure. Farley was an inveterate baseball fan, a New York Yankees fan. He was known throughout his political career in New York to transact a lot of political business from his box seat along the first baseline at Yankee Stadium. That seat is actually in the exhibition, the Postmaster General's seat from Yankee Stadium, which was in the collection of the Baseball Hall of Fame. So he was very interested in all things baseball. In 1939, when the Hall of Fame opened in Cooperstown and the first class of 10, the 10 Immortals, as they were called, were inducted into the Hall of Fame, he was invited up to Cooperstown for the occasion. And to mark the anniversary, the Postal Service issued this 3-cent postage, commemorative postage stamp in 1939, showing a boys' sandlot baseball game, because they didn't want to favor any particular league or team or player. But of course, the ultimate backstory of the stamp is that it commemorates the anniversary of an event that never happened. Commemorates the anniversary of the invention of baseball in Cooperstown by Abner Doubleday, which I think everybody now pretty much agrees is a complete fabrication, a total mythology of an event that never took place. So, but the issuance of the stamp gave that kind of federal seal of approval to the mythology of the game, and it stuck in a lot of people's minds.
There was a controversy about the issuance of the stamp, as I understand it. That is, Farley did a poll of stamp collectors about that time, and they overwhelmingly disapproved the issuance of the stamp. The president, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, overruled the poll of the stamp collectors to issue the stamp because FDR was also a big baseball fan. I don't know if he was a Yankee fan or what fan he was, but he was also a tremendous fan.
He was a Yankee, or he was a baseball fan. I don't know if it was the Yankees or not. He was a New Yorker, so it might have been. But he was also an accomplished stamp collector. Yeah. And so he frequently inserted himself, let's put it that way, into the stamp issuing policies of the Post Office Department when James Farley was the Postmaster General. We have lots of examples in the museum collection of things, you know, even being approved by Farley, and then FDR crosses it out and says, no, it's not approved, and he wants changes, and then he initials it. So he took a very active interest in the design of the stamps issued. FDR was also very interested in the baseball stamp because he thought it would be great for kids. He wanted it would be a great way to get kids to start collecting stamps. And in those days, if you wanted a first day cover with the first day postmark, you know, you had to send your money and your stamps into the post office that was issuing the stamp beforehand. You know, now I think you've got 60 or 90 days or something after the stamp is issued. But there, at this time, it really had to be there on the first day of issue. And there were hundreds of thousands of requests from kids. You could tell from the handwriting on the envelopes and things, you know, that who wanted first day covers of this issue. So I guess FDR was right in that sense. It did appeal to kids.
Further backstory, as I understand it, a lot of these from young kids who made requests for that first day issue didn't include the 3 cents for the stamp. So the postmaster of Cooperstown, New York, a guy named Melvin Bundy, personally covered the cost of the stamps for the kids that made the request.
Right. Yeah, they didn't want any kids to be disappointed. I doubt he ever got reimbursed for that.
I don't think there was a congressional appropriation to reimburse him.
Probably not.
The stamps that are issued, as I understand it, there are not only U.S. issued stamps here, but there are foreign stamps. And the distinction is to receive a personage on a U.S. postage stamp, you have to have been deceased for a number of years. That's not necessarily the case for foreign-issued stamps. Could you talk about foreign-issued stamps that might have baseball players who are, in fact, still alive?
Sure. Well, first I'll say that we just talked about the 1939 U.S. postage stamp, but the U.S. was not the first country to issue a baseball postage stamp. There were actually four countries that issued baseball-themed stamps before the U.S. The Philippines, Nicaragua, Panama, and Colombia all issued stamps even before the U.S. did. So we tell that story a bit, foreign commemoration of baseball on postage issues. But in terms of living players, I think one of the more interesting stories in the exhibit is of a set of stamps issued by Grenada in the 1980s, a long series of stamps featuring all living baseball players, obviously aimed at thematic and baseball collectors around the world, you know. And one of the stamps pictured Pete Rose, Charlie Hustle, Cincinnati Reds, the big red machine, right? And then later, I think it was later that year or early the next year, the whole scandal of him gambling on baseball games broke. And he was ultimately banned from the sport for life. And in future printings of that stamp issue, rather than replace him with another player or something like that, they just kind of put a box over his face and reissued the stamp with that stamp just kind of blank and having excised him from it. So it's an early, maybe it's an early form of cancel culture, I guess, in the post office, of very quickly removing him from the stamp issue because he had run afoul of the ethics rules of baseball. And that's, even today, that's a perennial source of debate and discussion among baseball fans, right? Is what was done to Pete Rose fair? Should it be redressed? Should he be allowed in the Hall of Fame? So on and so forth.
Should his personage be allowed on a postage stamp?
Right, right.
Some of my favorite issuances of postal stamps, baseball-themed, were the famous ballparks, which was done as a sheet, as well as the Legends of Baseball sheet that were issued a number of years ago. Tell me, how is the decision made who gets a postage stamp, or what fields are deserving, baseball fields are deserving of a postage stamp?
Well, since the 1950s, the Post Office Department and now the Postal Service have something called the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee, which receives requests from the public and for subjects to be commemorated on stamps, also proposes topics of their own initiative. There's also a staff of art directors and illustrators, designers, who work for the Postal Service and put together potential designs for these topics, submit them to the Citizen Stamp Advisory Committee. They discuss and make those sort of selections as to who should be commemorated and how on the various stamps. And then that's sent to the Postmaster General for approval. So that's all an advisory process. The ultimate decision rests with the Postmaster General. Now, different Postmasters General have delegated that responsibility at different levels. Some have wanted very much to do it personally. Some have delegated it a lot more than others. That varies from from PMG to PMG. But every stamp that's issued really sort of goes through that process of consultation and art design and direction before it reaches the PMG.
What's your favorite stamp?
Of all time or in the baseball
exhibit?
In the baseball exhibit. You know, I really enjoy, as a stamp collector and also a professional historian, I really enjoy stamps where the stamp doesn't just commemorate an event, but it's actually kind of a protagonist in the story. It helped to shape the events or the story. And so I think those first three baseball-themed stamps that were issued by the U.S., the one we talked about earlier in 1939, and then there were two others 30 years later in 1969, both around, that was the centennial of professional baseball, the Cincinnati Red Stockings becoming the first paid, openly professional baseball team, even though lots of individual players and teams prior to that had been paid under the table, brown bag jobs, secret arrangements, or they would split the receipts, the takes at from the ticket sales at the gate. But in 1869, you have the introduction of contracts and professional baseball teams and players. So both of those stamps kind of commemorate these dubious anniversaries and these anniversaries that are much more complicated than the stamp would make them out to be. And so they really help to create that legacy and that mythology of the history of the game in people's minds. So I like those where they have that added dimension.
The collection here, as you referenced, it's not just stamps. You have accumulated material from Cooperstown and from private collections. Can you talk a little bit about what's notable amongst those non-stamp inclusions in this exhibit?
Sure. One of the most notable, it's two very notable areas where we had to borrow to put together this exhibition, because naturally our collection is stamps and mail and postal artifacts. We don't have the baseball memorabilia and the other things in our collection to help tell these stories. So we went to the National Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown. We went to a number of other Smithsonian museums as well as the Smithsonian libraries to borrow material, and some private collectors as well. So one of the stories that we tell is how for over 100 years now, the hobbies of baseball card collecting and stamp collecting have been intertwined. Those Legends of Baseball stamps, for example, that you were talking about earlier that were issued around the year 2000, they were very self-consciously designed to mimic the look and feel of baseball cards from the 1930s. Same color palette, same type of poses, the player's name in a banner at the bottom of the stamp. And at the same time, there have been baseball cards that have been printed in by publishers in stamp form, perforated and gummed, mm-hmm. even with little albums called stamp albums. That's how the publishers marketed them. And so there's been this sort of iterative back and forth between mail products and baseball collectibles over the last 100 years. There were even baseball card publishers at the turn of the 20th century who published their baseball card at regulation postcard size so that they could be sent through the mail. And baseball card collectors collect these postcards. We would think of them as postcards, but baseball memorabilia collectors regard them as legitimate postcards. So there's been this back and forth between philately and baseball memorabilia collecting that goes back at least to 1911.
Is that the story behind this exhibit?
Yeah, there are two stories behind this exhibit, really. One is what we just talked about, how these two collecting fields are so deeply intertwined. The other is one we haven't talked about yet. One of the things that got me started just thinking about a baseball exhibit in general way back in the beginning was when I learned about, 7 or 8 years ago now, that the site of the building that the National, that you and I are sitting in right now, the Postal Square building, the old city post office, which is the home to the National Postal Museum, this was actually the site of one of Washington, D.C.'s earliest baseball fields in the 1880s.
Capitol Grounds?
The Capitol Grounds, right. Also known to locals at the time as the Swamp Poodle Grounds, because this neighborhood back then in the 1880s and 90s had a reputation for flooding after heavy rains. The Tiber River used to come, it still comes now, it's gone underground, but it used to be above ground much further than it is now. It came right up to where this building and Union Station are, and every time it rained, this neighborhood would flood. So they called it Swamp Poodle. But there was a ball field here, a major league ball field that held, according to newspaper reports at the time, it held 6,500 fans. The team that played here from 1886 it's not exactly clear when they disappeared. They seem to have folded kind of midway through the 1890 season. But they definitely played the full 1886 to 1889 seasons here. The team was called the Nationals, or the Statesmen, or the Senators, depending on which newspaper accounts you read. They weren't as fastidious about team names back then as they are now. And they were a terrible team, pretty much, by all accounts. But their catcher later became a famous major league player, a guy named Cornelius McGillicuddy, better known as Connie Mack, who was catcher for the team here, made his debut on this field here where the Postal Museum is, and later went on to be famous as the longest-serving manager in Major League Baseball history. He was manager of the Athletics, the A's, I think it was, for over 50 years.
Yeah, and one of his descendants became a United States Senator, Senator Connie Mack of Florida.
Right, right. So so the building, the place that we're in, has this deep connection to Washington, D.C.'s baseball history.
Do we know where in the museum home plate stood?
Not exactly, but it was somewhere on the, probably closer to the Massachusetts, North Capitol and G Street side of the building.
So coming out of Union Station, you could have gone right into, take it with a bat in hand and taken a swing.
Union Station didn't exist yet. The train station was still up on the Mall, but you can see in some of the photos, there are only three or four known photographs of this ball field, and you can see the train tracks and some train cars from, I guess that would have been the B&O Railroad at that time that went this way up to the Mall. But the outfield faces the Capitol building, so if you were sitting in the grandstands, you were and looking towards the outfield, you were looking at Massachusetts Avenue and Capitol Hill and the Capitol Dome and beyond in the outfield.
So, final question, Daniel. Who should come and visit this exhibit?
Oh, everybody. Everybody needs to come and visit this exhibit. I mean, certainly, if you're a stamp collector, if you're interested in the history of the Postal Service, if you're a baseball fan. But, you know, this isn't a... I wouldn't describe this as a very technical baseball exhibit. It's not about the rules and the statistics and batting averages, although there's a little of that sprinkled in. So it's approached more from the baseball as from the perspective of its importance in American cultural and social history and our influence around the world. So even if you're not a hardcore baseball fan, there's a lot of context and a lot of stories, I think, that will be interesting. It's not just who's batting average and who won the Triple Crown in what year. It's not a trivia exhibit. So I think even people who aren't baseball fans will find a lot to like in this show.
I don't know if you know this, Daniel, but there's an interesting coincidence about the sort of unofficial opening of this exhibit, which will take place when you unveil this to VIPs on Wednesday evening, April 6th. On that same day, maybe an hour and a half to 2 hours prior to the opening, President Biden is signing into law the Postal Service Reform Act at the White House.
Okay.
So there's so I am sure that people who you've invited to the opening reception will be transiting from the White House directly to your museum.
Oh, I'm sure. And then I'm sure a lot of them later on this week will be going to opening day
is on Thursday.
Right. And they're playing the Mets. And I think you might have let it drop earlier that you were a Mets fan?
Well, I'm a Nationals fan now, but I grew up as a Mets fan.
So did I. Yeah. The 86 Mets were the team of my youth.
86 Mets and the 69 Mets. Well, I want to thank you, Daniel.
Sure, this has been fun.
This has been Daniel Piazza of the National Postal Museum of the Smithsonian Institution, and I thank him for joining me today on Naps Chat and encourage our listeners to come to Washington to visit the museum's wonderful exhibit, Baseball America's Home Run. Thank you, Daniel.
Anytime.
Also, I want to thank Naps Chat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave a positive review in the Apple Podcast show, and more importantly, share Naps Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy. I'm gonna send